Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Welcome back. It's the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike. That's Doug.
Dude, it's been a long time.
It's been a while, dude.
I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
I know. It's been 2 weeks or so.
2 weeks. We've been away from the listeners. We're so sorry we weren't able to do the podcast last week.
Doug was unable.
It's true, but
Dude, do you have a good excuse for our listeners?
I do.
What's the excuse?
Sometimes when life calls, you have to answer, dude.
Yeah, okay.
And unfortunately, I was unavailable last week to participate in the podcast due to other activities that shall remain nameless.
Nameless activities.
It's true.
All right.
But I'm here now, dude, and it's good to be here. And we've sure got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
In terms of the Sharks, in terms of the NHL in general. Dude, if I had told you that after 26 games, the Dallas Stars would be second in the Western Conference, would you have kicked me in the groin?
No, I probably would have just taken your urine for a blood test because that is insanity.
Have you watched them play? They're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah,
they're real good, actually. They've got it going on right now, and that's pretty hilarious when you think of how we really kind of basted them in the past for just kind of rolling out the same lineup and not really making any changes, and New and Dyke just kind of going with the flow and letting Turco go. But Lettinen has been
good,
excellent.
Yeah.
And their top two lines have been
great.
Two of the best lines in hockey, and their D has been steady. And the question is for them is, are they really going to trade Brad Richards in the middle of this solid run?
Wow. Yeah, that would be really tough after missing the playoffs last year. They're going to trade maybe their best player. That's going to be a hard pill for the fan base to swallow. If they were, say, where Calgary was with 24 points instead of 34 points, and they continued along that vein, and they just sort of pondered their way on to another non-playoff appearance, I think they could probably trade Brad Richards and say, we don't need $7.8 million on our books here. Let's get him out. Let's really continue the rebuild. But right now, actually, this is a little bit of a double-edged sword for the Dallas Stars.
So now, what do you do? What's more painful for a Stars fan? Seeing them trade Brad Richards or potentially cutting off your arm after being trapped in a canyon?
Yeah. We did see 127 Hours and with James Franco. It was good. It was a good movie.
Very good movie.
I definitely recommend it. And I read a really interesting article about James Franco today for some reason. He's a very weird guy. And it was kind of a weird movie, but good. So I think I would cut Mike Ribeiro's arm off.
You would?
That would be my first choice.
Yeah, I would cut Mike Ribeiro's arm off with Steve Ott's severed arm. I would just try and...
Or his severed leg. His severed leg with the skate still on it.
That's right. It's his severed leg.
Dude, we got to talk about the Sharks.
Okay,
We've been off 2 weeks. It's been up and down. I think we're sort of almost avoiding the real subject matter here because, frankly, it seems like... We talked about how they're up and then they're down. We use the term languid, or rather Jim from Section 202 used the word languid. This week he has another word for us. But now...
It's like Sesame Street.
Yeah, it
the
is.
The word of the day
the word
is languid.
Yeah, it's like super password.
Apathetic.
The word is... Well, now the word is bipolar. I mean, now the Sharks have not only gone from playing good one night to playing sort of pretty bad the next night. They've gone from playing absolutely... terribly got awful one period, and then the very next they play their best period of the season,
right?
So the swings are getting wider and the swings are getting quicker. So what to make of it? We saw a really, you know, disappointing performance against Montreal, and was I the one that picked Montreal to do poorly this season? I think it was me.
It was you. I touted them as a top three seed in the Eastern Conference. Thank you very much.
I was definitely wrong. I mean, they showed a lot.
That's
Saturday.
A good hockey team, and they're playing really... without Markov, and they didn't even have PK Subban in the lineup.
Right. He was a healthy scratch.
So, you know.
And they were
well,
they
Carey
were
Price, is,
real,
as we
real
know
good.
From having him on a fantasy team, is having a really outstanding year.
But still, I mean, they forecheck hard. They play hard.
And that's why
shift.
They won two playoff series last year. They're playing the same way, and they're just getting better.
Yeah, so Montreal definitely was a surprise. I mean, I knew they were a good team. You look at their record and stuff, but... you know, being a Western Conference fan, you know, being a, you know, I don't get to watch games starting at 4 o'clock Pacific time unless it's Sharks and I TiVo it. So it was a little surprising to me to see how competitive Montreal was. I knew that they had a lot of skill, obviously. You talk about Pekanic, he had a really great goal in that game. And the Kositsins, we've talked about them before. The fact they have Markov off and in the D, I mean, we've talked about Josh Georges. He's a pretty good defenseman.
And he's a legit NHL defenseman.
He's absolutely legit now. I mean, I know we poked some fun at him back in the day, but he is absolutely legit now.
He can take a hit.
And yeah, I mean, with Brian Gionta, Mike Camilleri, Scott Gomez, I mean, you go down their lineup, they got a lot of good players.
So not a too much of a disheartening loss to go to Montreal, to lose to Montreal. I didn't think they played that badly against Montreal.
But again, after such a dominating performance against Ottawa, I was hoping, again, I know I sound like a broken record, I was hoping after the Chicago win they were going to pick it up and beat Vancouver, and they got crushed. I was hoping after dominating Ottawa they were going to pick it up and then maybe beat a good team in Montreal. That didn't happen. They certainly didn't look great. Montreal looked a lot better than we did. And then, you know, we then play the first period against Detroit, and we look so outclassed, it's not even funny. It was like AHL versus NHL here.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking to myself, my God, what on earth is happening? And then
it was pretty lucky that it wasn't completely out of hand.
It could have easily been 4 or 5 to nothing after one period in Detroit, which, you know, hard to imagine that they could have turned it around.
Well, it was 2-0 at one point, and then the refs kind of gifted us one.
That wasn't a high. You mean the high stick?
I'm talking about the goal that clearly went over the line and the ref blew it dead because he lost sight of it.
Well, he blew the whistle before it went over the line.
Right, but so he should not have blown the whistle.
Sure, sure. But you see that kind of stuff fairly. I mean, about, I mean, there was
That was a bad call.
And there was an absolutely awful call against Dan Boyle, I believe, in that game as well, where he got, or that was, maybe that was a different game. I'm trying to remember what's going on here, but
Was the game, dude, and as they're all kind of blending together,
yeah,
where the Sharks cleared the puck, it went off the referee, and then the other it was the Montreal game, right? And then he came in and scored, right?
Yeah, and then they just turned around and scored and went the other way. Right, and it's like, thanks for that.
All right.
So, yeah, you see this stuff go both ways. But
so they're up, they're down, they're up, they're down.
They're 4-4-2 in their last 10, right? So they're under 500.
Which is good
10.
Enough to be in a 4-way tie for the 8th seed as of tonight in the Western Conference. Luckily for them, there's not a ton of separation right now.
Right.
Vancouver underachieving. Mm-hmm. Detroit's really the only team that has separated themselves at all. You know, Phoenix, 32 points. Chicago is having problems too, 32 points. Columbus is playing a little bit over their head with 31 points. There's a big mismatch of teams kind of shoved together there. And then there's Calgary. So sad.
Right. In Edmonton.
You can have the countdown, Sutter countdown. It's still surprising that they're still here. We said Christmas.
Right.
It'll be a Christmas gift.
It could be.
To them. So, dude, as we're looking at the good and the bad this week, what stands out to you as being positive in the last 2 weeks?
Well, one thing I know we've spent time in past shows and we're going to spend some more time is about Niemi. Let me just touch on it really quickly. I'm surprised that he's played as well as he has the past few games. Certainly against Detroit, he played well, played really well against Ottawa. So, you know, this is a guy, my party line was you play him against some weaker opposition. Ottawa was the right move to play him. And then you sort of build him back up over time. You don't just sort of throw him into the fire. And it's sort of worked out. So I guess it's nice to have a bit of an option because, you know, 3 weeks ago, it looked like Nidamaki was really the only choice that we had in goal. And now it seems like we have two legitimate choices.
Yeah, but I don't understand what Nidamaki has done to basically ride solid pine for the last 2 weeks. I mean, Niemi has started 3 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
He's started 5 of the last 6, I think, right?
5 of the last 7.
5 of the last 7. And, I mean, he's still... I mean, it's not like he's been off the charts in every game. He was horrible in Vancouver.
Yep.
He was not great against Montreal. He was outstanding against Ottawa. He was very good against Detroit. He was very good against Chicago. He was bad in Dallas.
Like, right.
And Nidamaki, I mean, you look at his numbers still, he's at the top of the NHL in the goalie numbers, save percentage. You know, he's at least in the top 15, you know, and the guy is riding Pine now as they're just putting everything behind Niemi, dude. What does this say to a player like Nidamaki when this is happening? You're off to a great start, and then now all of a sudden they're just like, okay, thanks for playing well, but we're going to try and get the other guy hot now.
Right.
What's the deal here?
I don't understand this. I mean, it's good to get Niemi back going again. You don't want to have only one goaltender and not trust your other goaltender.
I guess it's like his last two games, Nidamaki, not great. And maybe that's been the red flag, maybe. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, he won the Edmonton game, but he lost to Colorado, he lost to Columbus, he lost to Detroit. So, you know, has there been a little bit of decline? Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't blame the Columbus game on him, though.
No, not at all. I mean, Sharks looked terrible in that game. I sort of understand Niemi against Ottawa, as I said. I would have thought Nidamaki against Montreal, and at least Todd McClellan's explanation for starting Niemi against Detroit was that Nidamaki didn't play that well when we played Detroit only 2 weeks ago, or on the 30th of November, which is actually only a week ago. So I guess I can sort of understand that. So could this just be a bump in the road, just a glitch? I mean, I would be shocked if we don't. We got to see Nidamaki against Philadelphia, right?
Well, we were pretty adamant that Niemi was not going to play against the Chicago Blackhawks, and we were wrong.
Yeah.
But the trend seems to be to rally behind guys. Now, I don't think there's as much maybe passion in Nidamaki's heart to really stick it to the Flyers. I mean, Niemi or Heatley in Ottawa, or Dan Boyle was probably feeling a lot of animosity towards the Lightning, and they all rallied behind those guys. So I don't know. I guess whatever we say is going to be the opposite. So who do you want to have start tomorrow, dude? And we'll say the opposite.
Okay, I'll say Nidamaki.
So. All right, so then we're going to see Niemi for sure.
Probably. Yeah.
Great, it's a lock.
Okay.
It's good. A date. Fantastic.
It's a lock.
Okay,
so that controversy has been addressed. I mean, another sort of controversy is that, well, you know, when we saw the bad loss against Detroit, we had three AHL defensemen playing, Mike Moore, Derek Jocelyn, and Justin Braun. Certainly one of those defensemen has really separated himself from the other two, and we have Vallin back in the lineup and Demers back in the lineup. So the question is, Justin Braun, where does he stand in the lineup right now, and do you keep him around instead of Ken Huskins?
I'm going to make a case here because I'm of the opinion right now that Justin Braun has to stay. He has to stay unless they make an acquisition to, I mean, he's providing this shot from the point,
right,
that's been so sorely missed.
Right.
And yeah, is he going to make mistakes in his own zone? Sure.
Yeah.
But obviously McClellan already likes him more than Jocelyn, already likes him more than Moore.
Mm-hmm.
He played more minutes last night. Oh, this could be more attributed to just getting back into game shape than Demers and Vallin. I mean, he played 17 minutes last night. He plays a lot shorthanded. They seem to trust the kid, you know, more than they trusted Demers last year when, you know, they really, really babied him.
Mm-hmm. Sent him down even.
Yeah. Braun, 6 games, 5 points, a +2, 12 shots. He's averaging 2 shots a game. He has 3 games where he has 3 shots or more. Do you know, with the Sharks, did a little homework today, dude. Of course, Dan Boyle has 15 games of 3 shots or more.
Right.
That's not surprising. Demers has 6 games of 3 shots or more. Huskins, 0.
0.
Murray, 1. Vallin, 2. Vlasic, 3.
Okay.
Braun in 6 games, 3 games of 3 shots or more.
Right.
And you look at Rob Blake at this point last year, he had 10 games of 3 shots or more. If Braun had been here all year, he'd have a dozen.
Okay.
So this is the type of player on the other end of the ice that we've been missing. And his shots, they get through, dude.
Yeah.
They get through and things happen.
I've been really trying to take a look at what the defensemen are doing or not doing in order to get shots through. And especially with Vlasic, one thing I'm noticing is a lot of times you see the defensemen get the puck at the point and they quickly make a move to the center. They you know, they backskate or they do some crossovers and try to move to the point and try to move to the center of the ice in order to get the shot around the block. The problem is a lot of these guys, what they do is they take those first steps, you know, they get a little bit of jump, and then they coast, load up, and shoot. And the time it takes for them to coast and load up, the guy who's supposed to be blocking the shot gets back in position.
Right.
But you know who's not doing that? Justin Braun's not doing that. He is moving, 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 and then shoots while moving. He doesn't load up and try to get this great quality shot on net, you know, high and hard or whatever. He's got a good enough release that he can get it off while he's still trying to accelerate away from the blocker. And that's what's getting that shot is through is all about. I mean, maybe Rob Blake just had this sort of innate ability to just shoot around people. Braun has the ability to move and continue to move while he shoots, and you don't see Murray do that. You definitely aren't seeing Vlasic do that. And these other guys, they're trying to get this such a great shot off, they forget that by that time there's a guy in front of them again. And Braun, for whatever reason, is not doing that. Maybe just because he's so damn nervous to be playing in the NHL. Who knows? Maybe he'll start slacking again. But you're right. We got to keep a guy like that on the team, right? We have to keep a guy like that to provide a little bit of danger from the point.
He's polished in that end of the ice. He knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
On the offensive end, he knows what he's doing. On the defensive end, he's made some mistakes. He's out of position sometimes.
Right.
He needs some help. I think what they did last night against Detroit might be the formula going forward.
7D?
7D. The team is better. I mean, who would you rather have out there, Justin Braun or John McCarthy? I'd pick Justin Braun.
Yeah.
Justin Braun can have a greater impact on the game. When Huskins comes back, you know, he's probably going to play,
mm-hmm.
and you don't play Jocelyn,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't put Braun out there in situations where, you know, his PK time will probably disappear, and you let him play the majority of the power play time,
mm-hmm.
and you put him out there in situations where he can be successful. You maybe baby him a little bit like they did with Demers last year, and let the kid, you know, contribute.
Right.
Certainly has had a pretty significant impact. Now, you know, if we get a greater sample size of games, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we'll see in the next 10 games he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of times you see with these college players is they're not used to this long schedule. They're not used to 82 games. They play a few games. A lot of times you see that with rookies even. They play 10 games and they look great. We saw that with Ferrio last year. And then they sort of fade away a little bit and then they end up getting sent back down. I certainly think that that's a possibility here for Justin Braun. He could be just, you know, the freshman excitement. And once he's into his 20th game or something, you don't see this sort of dynamic blue liner, you know, getting shots through anymore.
But you got to see.
Right.
I mean, the other options, Jocelyn is a zero, I mean, mm-hmm. to me right now. And Mike Moore is, you know, not going to take this team to the next level. And Braun is showing the ability to be that kind of impact player. And you know who else is, dude? Ben Ferrio.
Yeah.
Ben Ferrio has been really good these last, you know, five games when he's had a shot, when Seta went down. You know, Devin Setoguchi can't be feeling really good about watching what Ben Ferrio's doing right now. In six games, Ferrio's a +5.
Right.
With 4 points.
Yeah.
That means the dude is out there when the team's playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be all over the place. The kid's got jump. He's always in front of the net.
He's got a real nose for the net.
He's aggressive. That line has clicked.
Yeah.
And when Seto comes back, I'm sorry. I don't think Ferrio, they can't send him down. I don't think you can send him down, dude. You got to keep him.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they have to make room for Seto somewhere in the lineup, though. So if they're going to keep Ferrio in the lineup, then who gets nudged out when Seto gets healthy? Mayers?
Heatley.
Yeah. Because he's been really cold, too.
No, I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know. Maybe they'll just kind of start rotating guys around, like Ferrio and McGinn and Seto will just take turns playing. But I don't think you could take Nickel or Mayers out.
McGinn,
you
know? Maybe?
Maybe McGinn. I mean, you know, we like Jamie McGinn. We like his energy, but he hasn't really contributed that much on mm-hmm. the score sheet, but he hasn't really been put in that type of situation either. I'm just saying, if we're looking, and it's, again, in just six games, it's not enough. And Ferrio had some limited success last year, too, and
right.
then he totally fizzled out.
Right, right.
And maybe that's what's going to happen, but right now, he's taking the advantage of this opportunity. I like what I see with Ben Ferrio. They got to give him a shot. 15 games. You know, give him 15 games to see. Can he keep this up?
Yeah.
Can he be a guy that in 15 games, if he has 12 points, then the phone's going to start ringing for other people offering Devin Setoguchi and whatever sort of, you know, ingrown toenail or whatever his problem is. No, we still don't know what the injury is with Seto, and he's on the IR.
Right. Right. Yeah. God, I hope it's not something bad, but I we'll never know, of course. But the thing is, he must be sensing his window closing. I mean, we've talked about it before, even when we didn't have other guys to step up. And now when we have like other younger players like Justin Braun and Ben Ferriero and Logan Couture, which we'll talk about in a second, certainly showing that, hey, you know, we're legitimate threats to play in this league. A guy like Devin Setoguchi, who is a number 8 overall pick, showed all this promise 2 years ago. That is looking further and further into the horizon behind us. And now it's a what have you done for me lately type of situation. So what do they do with Seto? I mean, where does he play right now? Because, I mean, you can't put him ahead of Couture at this point.
No, zero chance. So, I don't know. I mean, he's in an awkward spot. That's for sure. I mean, and when he gets healthy, whenever that is, and whatever we figure out what the injury is, it doesn't sound like it's very good because he was with the team and they sent him back
right
to San Jose. He's getting, you know, reevaluated or treated on whatever this is. It sounds like he's, we have no information, but not coming back.
Yeah.
You
know, he's a ways away
in the next week. You know, that this is just an even longer opportunity or audition for Ben Ferriero to say, I'm not leaving. And so, dude, I don't know what the answer is. You know, right now, I guess if I were to make a guess that when Seto comes back, that it could be Jamie McGinn who's going to be the one, and John McCarthy will be back in Worcester. My guess.
I disagree with you, and I don't think the 7 defensemen lineup is a long-term option.
I don't think it's long-term either, but
I mean, even 10 games, I can't see them playing 7 defense.
So who's
games.
The one who sits?
They might do the rotating thing. You know, I mean, if Justin Braun gets a little cold, they'll take him out. I think he's on a pretty short leash at this point. I mean, he's a young kid. They never expected to play in the NHL.
Yeah. To me, if you're not going to play Braun every night, he shouldn't be here.
Right.
He needs to continue to keep growing his game and improving and playing in more, you know, important situations if you think he can't contribute. But it's not like he's being babied like Jocelyn and Moore, who I don't know. I don't have the thing up. I'm going to look at it right now. I mean, I wonder what the most minutes those guys played in their games here, you know, whereas Braun has played, I think one game he had 20 minutes or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They're certainly throwing him out there with a lot more trust than they are the other two guys.
Well, he seems to be much more of a weapon than the other guys. The other guys are a stopgap, and he's a weapon. I mean, which would you rather have in there? A guy that can actually make something happen, or you got a guy you hope something bad doesn't happen against?
I definitely would pick Mike Moore every single time.
All right, dude. Let's take some emails here. Questions at dudesonhockey.com is the email. Let's go to Dimitri. He said he was watching the game against the Red Wings, although this was a few days ago. So this is before the come from behind win that the Sharks put against the Red Wings. And he said, I realize the Sharks have no European presence in their offense. Perhaps it was so painfully obvious after the way Datsyuk and Zetterberg were playing that night, but all of our offensive players are from North America. And it's a known fact that Europeans prefer to pass and set up more instead of just dumping the puck and fighting for it, which was what the Sharks were doing. Could that be the factor we need to take our offensive play to the next level, helping us win the Stanley Cup? I might be a bit biased here. I grew up watching the World Champions and World Championships in Red Machine, where there was more passing and setup, less dumping. But most of the best NHL teams have that mix, like the Capitals and the Penguins, and it's working great. So, dude, is this something that the Sharks need to avail themselves of? I mean, it's when's the last? I'd say the last great European forward we've had was Teemu Selanne. I mean, can we think of another one that was? Well, I mean, of course, I'm missing Nicholas Sundstrom. But
I don't know. I guess, would you count Milan Mihalic as a great forward?
Yeah.
He's a top 6 impact player. It's not Doug Wilson's MO.
That's not a Doug Wilson, but,
at all.
Mihalic is not a Doug Wilson draft. That's a 2001 draft, so that's not Doug Wilson.
I pulled up the Doug Wilson drafts here, and the European forwards especially
thin.
Especially thin. He doesn't seem to be shy about taking European defensemen.
Yeah.
But European forwards, not so much. Not can you feel the love tonight? Not so much. Couture and is in there. Nick Bonino, another college player. Almost all North American players in the 2007 draft and the 2008 draft. You've got Harry Sateri, and everybody else is either American or Canadian. In the 2009 draft, Marek Videnský and is a European center from Slovakia or Slovenia. Which one is it, dude?
Slovenia.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Dominic Bielke?
Mm. Yeah.
A German defenseman. So another German defenseman. He likes those German defensemen. Konrad Abdulthauser.
Abdulthauser.
In 2010, but it's a good point. The type of role that we're looking for this European type forward to play, I know he's not, you know, European, but isn't Joe Thornton essentially a European style player?
He's not a dump and chase kind of guy, that's for sure.
No. He's a pass first kind of guy. Who aggravatingly doesn't always use his superior size and seems to not relish doing the dirty work. And I mean, I feel like I'm describing most of the European forwards in the league. And it's our Joe Thornton. I feel like we have a few guys who play that kind of style. I mean, doesn't Danny Heatley play that kind of way too?
I don't know about Danny Heatley, but I mean, certainly.
There's a difference between how Joe Pavelski plays and how Joe Thornton plays. I mean, there's definitely the North American style versus a little bit more of a, you know, slick passing style.
Also to go to Dimitri's point, I mean, you look at the Sharks' offense; they're not that bad off in that regard. I mean, they may be fourth in the Pacific, but they're first in the Pacific in goals. They're two behind Vancouver, Colorado, scoring at a pretty amazing clip. They have 78 goals. Looks like they are fourth or fifth in the West in goals scored. So they're not doing that bad. Their problem is goals against right here. They're last in the Pacific Division in goals against. So
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Anaheim is worse, dude.
Oh, Anaheim is
way worse.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry. My bad.
Yikes.
But I agree. I wish that the Sharks would mind that.
But they won't. That talent pool. Not. As long as Doug Wilson's the captain of the ship, that's not going to happen.
It could also be a function of scouting. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, maybe the Sharks just aren't as deep. They aren't as good and well entrenched in Europe. I mean, clearly the Red Wings have a long history of scouting Europe, and maybe the Sharks just aren't that strong in that area, and they don't have the resources, right? All these teams are cutting back. A lot of teams have cut scouts in the past few years, and maybe the Sharks say, okay, listen, we think that our strength is scouting you know, Canadian junior players and college players, and that's how we're going to focus our resources, and we're just going to sort of give up Europe right now. I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I understand
I don't know if it's monetary reasons. I think it's philosophy, and I think it's general manager preference and maybe his upper, you know, level scouts' preference as well, that they believe that they can mold a team for the San Jose Sharks that can win with North American players and have better success. You know, we know Dean Lombardi doesn't really function like that. You know, he, you know, has brought in a lot of European players when he was your GM of the Sharks. And I don't think he has a problem with them, but I see you looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins here.
I'm looking at the Penguins because I wanted to see what Dimitri said about the Penguins. And the fact is that Crosby's really sort of carrying that team and not Malkin. Malkin's a minus player, one of only four minus players on the team. And
Malkin has, I mean, in his defense, dude, he has had a lot of health problems this year. He's been banged up. I don't think he's really been himself.
It's true, but he's not the bread and butter of their offense. Clearly, that's Sidney Crosby at this point. So Chris Kunitz has more points than he doesn't have more points. He has more.
At the end of the year, if Malkin doesn't have
more points
than Chris Kunitz or two and a half, you know, dude, then I will eat this Jamal Mayer's puck.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Delicious.
Thanks for the email, Dimitri. Appreciate it. Let's see. Let's go to another email. We had one from Jim from Section 202, and he was calling us to task, or really you to task, because you made a sort of an offhanded remark about how if the Sharks don't go out and get a top defenseman, that Doug Wilson should be fired. And I know you sort of immediately thought about that and said, okay, well, maybe that was a little bit over the top.
Well, I think what, in retrospect, dude, okay, I'm going off topic a little bit, but mm-hmm. there is a story here, okay? 2 years ago, when the Giants were struggling, a lot of people were clamoring for them to trade Tim Lincecum in order to get a very mediocre young bat from the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Rios, who mm-hmm. has ended up being a average outfielder who's completely overpaid. And it was a panic move. They considered it, and thank God they didn't do it, because mm-hmm. It would have gutted the heart of their team, and they would have lost. And I think at that time, I was really upset that they weren't trying to. They had bonds. They should mm-hmm. have gone for it one more time, and they would have completely mortgaged the future to do it, and it would have made no difference. So, upon further reflection and further review,
right,
I think that. What I mean is I will be very disappointed because we've talked about the window of opportunity many times. Mm-hmm. And I think the window is open this year.
Yes.
It's open. There are good teams in the Western Conference. There is not a great team right now.
Mm-hmm. The Red Wings.
Well, dude, we beat them.
Right.
We beat them.
In their house.
We beat them in their house. We destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we really pummeled them. I believe in a 7-game series, we can beat them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they know it.
Right.
That it can happen. And if we played them again in the playoffs, they would be the team that's nervous, not us. Because I think the Sharks have a little bit of confidence. But if we don't take advantage of the opportunity, dude, I'm going to be really disappointed if Doug Wilson believes that this is good enough. Because mm-hmm. it's not.
Right. Right.
It's not. The Sharks got graded today by Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
They graded all the NHL teams.
Right.
The Sharks got a D+.
That high?
A D+, dude. And compared to, like, Calgary got an F.
Right.
And Edmonton and Minnesota got Ds. And we got a D+. That's the company that they put us in.
What did New Jersey get?
An F, I'm sure.
Okay.
Dude, I didn't even look at the Eastern Conference. I don't care. But, That's the company we're in,
right.
You know, in their minds, in terms of being just so
disappointing. Sure.
And I think that's why we sort of feel just this general kind of malaise about the whole thing. Like, it's a bummer. Dude, have you changed your mind? Do you accept my retraction?
Of course I do, dude. I mean, we all say things in the heat of the moment that we, upon further reflection and review, we don't agree with. And
like I thought that bologna sandwich I ate before the podcast was a good idea.
Good thinking. But now?
Now? No.
No.
I don't think it was a good idea.
Okay.
And I apologize to you.
Well, I accept your apology, dude. Bologna is never a good idea. Well, Jim says, basically, I feel as long as you have an effectual GM who has a sound philosophy backed by success, count your blessings. I don't agree with every decision Doug Wilson makes, but I know he cares if the team wins or loses intensely. Be mindful of your whims, for you could do a hell of a lot worse. Well, Jim, you couldn't say it better than that. Of course, I think we all will be pretty disappointed if the Sharks don't get better at the blue line. The thing is, the problem is this isn't a game of perfect information, and we're not going to know the details of any possible maneuverings and negotiations. I mean, what if, you know, we say, okay, you know, Joni Pikkanen is a player that we've talked about several times on this podcast. That this is a guy, last year of his deal, good defenseman, offensive, really plays well for the Carolina Hurricanes. Hurricanes could be looking to dump him since they went out and got Ian White, another guy that we liked. What if, you know, Jim Rutherford calls up Doug Wilson and says, sure, okay, I'll take a Couture and a first off your hands.
No, click.
And you say, no, click. And then the fans in San Jose all go batty because we didn't go get a defenseman. Well, if you knew about the details of that particular negotiation, you would say, of course you wouldn't go get him, because that's stupid. That's trading Tim Lincecum.
Right.
So
I guess we're so used to Wilson pulling a Heatley out of the hat.
That's right.
That we're just kind of expecting that kind of magic would happen again. I got caught up in the moment, dude. But I still it doesn't negate the fact that I still will be disappointed.
Of course.
You know what? You have to give to get. And
Yeah.
There are certain things you shouldn't give, and Logan Couture
is one of them.
Is one of them.
Yes.
And that's because
off
right now, dude, to me, he's the clear rookie of the year in the NHL. This is the other potential Calder Trophy nominees, dude. Jeff Skinner, Carolina Hurricanes.
Great beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Kind of tailed off a little bit.
8 goals, 12 assists, 20 points, minus five. Jordan Eberle, 5 goals, 13 assists. He is a minus two. John Carlson's having a good year for the Caps. He's a defenseman, 13 points plus seven. He's playing 22 minutes a night.
Yeah.
He's a big part of their team. I put Cam Fowler on the list, although I think, you know, he's a little bit over his head, but he has shown why he deserved to be a high round pick. He's got 12 points and minus eight. But, I mean, he's not a bad team.
Ducks are minus 16 overall.
He's playing a ton of minutes. You know, it's unfortunate that he's on that team because he's going to be a good player. Maybe, you know.
What about Taylor? Was it Taylor Hall?
Yeah, Taylor Hall. I mean, I didn't put him here. I mean, I think he's still kind of viewed right now as being disappointing. Like, he hasn't lived totally up to. I would rather have Logan Couture right now.
You have Ennis?
I don't have Ennis on here. I have Sergei Bobrovsky,
the
goalie for the Flyers, 14-4-2, 2.21, and a .925 save percentage.
That's a big surprise.
So that's a big surprise. But Couture, this is his biggest and most compelling number, is besides his 12 goals, his plus five, his four game-winning goals puts him not just, you know, top of the rookie class, it's like top of the NHL class, dude.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I'm looking this up right now. I'm looking it up. He's tied for number one in the NHL with guys like Jeff Carter and Steven Stamkos. They suck, you know? So Logan Couture, dude, has been, I mean, if you're picking the best, most exciting part of the Sharks season so far, it's got to be him, right?
He's definitely the big bright spot in an otherwise up and down year. I think my finalist for the Calder right now, I'd pick one of each. I'd go Bobrovsky, I'd go Couture, and I'd go John Carlson, because playing 22 minutes a night as a rookie for one of the best teams in the NHL says something about your skills, and you know, that shows that the coaching staff has a lot of confidence in him. So I would probably pick those three guys, and you know, of course, I'm in the bag for Couture. So I'm, you know, what a great surprise this kid has been. I mean, you know, we wanted to make sure we thought he was going to be great, didn't think he was going to be this great this soon. And I mean, he keeps going at this pace and ramps up. I mean, he could be an 80-point player in this league, which is
amazing. The thing that's
great
was watching him score two totally different ways against Detroit.
Yeah.
He scored by sneaking in behind the net and just kind of getting in the way, and it went off his skate, right? And then the other goal where he just wins the draw, Klo ties up his man, the puck gets pushed forward, and then he just blows by everybody and just hoses Jimmy Howard.
Yeah.
Like 5 seconds after we scored the other goal.
Right, right.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this has been definitely the bright spot here for the Sharks this season. So, I know we've been talking about this inconsistency all year. Do you see anything? I've felt so confident and optimistic. Do you feel this optimism now, dude, or are you taking a more wait and see approach with this team? I mean, could they get blown? They could definitely get blown out.
They could get
Philly.
Blown out tomorrow.
Yeah.
They could get completely murdered tomorrow, and I think it would be really disappointing. I think we're waiting for a string of consistent wins,
right?
Which we haven't really seen yet. This would be a great opportunity for them to go into Philly, even if they lose in overtime in Philly. I won't be that disappointed,
right?
Because that's an elite team.
Absolutely.
You can go in and you can give them a good run and you can play hard in their building, and then the next night you go beat Buffalo. That's a good road trip. If they lose both of these next games, the Detroit win is almost worth nothing, because it just shows how inconsistent they are.
Right.
Speaking of inconsistent, dude, we need to recap for our listeners what happened in the pickoff.
We tied.
We tied.
Yeah.
We both went 4-3. It really came down to the last game.
The last night, both of my picks went into overtime. One of them won and one of them lost.
One of them won and one of them lost. And so, dude, we both went 4-3. That means that we both would have barely won money in Vegas. I think barely, you know, which
I think I won one on one of my underdogs. Did you lose both your underdogs?
I don't remember.
I might have won a little bit more money because I won one of my underdogs. So
we have to come up with a tiebreaker, dude. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, we could just, what do you think? Just one game, winner take all?
One game, winner take all?
Yeah.
Okay.
One right. game between now, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You pick one game. -150 or more even than that, and winner take all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, dude. You know, I have a different idea.
Okay.
You tell me what you think. All right. What if we pick one game that we disagree on?
Okay. Okay.
And that's the game.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Let's do that.
So let's look at tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. You
let's
ready?
Look at tomorrow.
All right. So we've got Toronto at Pittsburgh. I don't think we're going to be picking that one. we've got the Flyers and the Sharks. It's way too close to my heart to even begin to pick that one, dude. And now I have the spinning wheel
of death.
Of death,
dude. I'll take Toronto. No.
My heart just skipped a beat.
You looked at me there for a second.
I could taste the steak dinner, and I could see your credit card coming out.
Yeah.
Okay. We have Detroit at home against Nashville. I have a feeling no one's going to be interested in that.
Yeah.
Dallas at Chicago.
Ooh. What? I guess. Do you have the line, or you?
I do have the line.
What
it would qualify. The line is Chicago -150.
Wow. Okay. Do I want to commit? Do you want Chicago in that game?
No. Wait. Do I want Chicago in that game?
Or do you want Dallas? Dallas is hot.
Dallas is hot, man.
Ooh. I think this is the game we got to choose, dude.
Oh.
This is it. This is the one.
This is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God. Do you want Chicago?
I will take Chicago.
I'll take Dallas.
Okay, sweet.
Oh, what have I done?
I don't know, dude.
You do know Patrick Kane's not playing.
I do know that.
You know Marian Hossa is not playing.
Marian Hossa is not playing?
Oh, no!
Oh, man.
They're both out.
What's Hossa? What happened to Hossa?
I don't know. He's got a bruised ego. He's out of the lineup till mid-December.
Okay, I'm backing out.
Oh, we
but
shook
they're
on
minus
it.
One. Okay, we shook on it. I'm committed. Okay, I knew about Kane. Who cares about Hossa?
Oh, wow. This is it. It's all coming down to this.
It's all coming down to this.
You
dude.
Will be happy to know that Dallas is 2-6 in the last meetings in Chicago and okay. just 2-6 against the Blackhawks.
They have anybody
general.
Hurt?
No.
Other than Carey Ledman.
Mark Fistrick and Toby Peterson
okay.
are questionable. But Chicago's been playing well, too. This will be a good one, dude. Oh, no. Now I'm going to be nervous.
Yeah. This is going to be fun.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to sleep.
Dallas versus
all
Montreal,
day
dude.
Tomorrow.
Don't, I hope you're not sleeping during the day, dude.
I sleep all day. That's all I do. Dude, it will be exciting. It's all coming down to this.
At least we'll have a definite winner. We won't have another stupid tie.
Somehow I feel like I have just walked into a death trap. But
I could have walked into a buzzsaw. They don't have Kane or Marian Hossa.
It might not matter.
Yeah.
It might not matter.
We'll see. All right, dude. Well, it's a good wager and a good podcast. Thanks for holding with us. I think we'll definitely be back again next week here at Dudes on Hockey. So send us your questions and comment on the blog or like us on Facebook, and we'll be back again next Wednesday.
Go Sharks!
Later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.